Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got Georgia-based author, podcaster, coach, just human being extraordinaire, Artesia Boulding. And I really love this conversation. I know I say that a lot, but you know what? I've been lucky a lot. And I think you're going to feel lucky too after you hear this conversation, because it is really a shot of positivity right to the core. So I'm going to get us right into that conversation as quick as possible. But I want to bring something up right up at the top here, because there's an element in this conversation that some people could consider to be political. Now, what do I mean by that? We discuss some of the issues that we're facing right now in this country. As of this conversation, it was July of 2020. And there's a lot going on in this country. I mean, let's face it. We are having a moment as a nation where we are asking for everyone to get on the same page as far as our history is concerned. And that's difficult. Let me give you this example as it relates to this podcast. I'm a man with manic depressive, bipolar disorder, coupled with chronic suicidality, meaning I see suicide as an option when I'm picking out shoes. It's just how I'm wired. Now, there's a lot of things that I've done to wire myself to react differently when those thoughts come in my head, but I still have them. That's a part of my reality. And so part of my history is that I've had a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of not knowing what's going on, not being able to trust my own emotions about certain things. And so as a result, I have a very personal history that might be different from the history that someone else has experienced. So if you've never felt that way in your life, it might be difficult for you to understand what it feels like to be a person that has that just wired in. You might even have an instinct to give advice, like, well, when you feel like that, just know that it's not true. When you feel like that, just know the pain that you're going to cause other people if you take yourself out. If you feel like that, just don't feel like that, because feeling like that is your problem. It's not helpful. I'll tell you what is helpful. When someone says that they're in pain or that they're having a difficulty, believe them. Ask what you can do to help. And if you don't understand a situation, or you disbelieve a situation, that's fine. Find out more. If you think that maybe something isn't happening the way you think it is, gather information. Do some research. And don't do research to see if you can prove that you're right. Do some research to see if maybe you're wrong. That's not political. That's intellectual. That's something that you can do as a person. Have empathy for your fellow people. And when someone says they're having a problem, find out how you can help. That's how we get past things. That's how we get through things. Together. Now, is there a place for fighting about stuff? You bet there is. There's all kinds of things that we can disagree on. We can disagree on how to deliver that help. But let's not get lost in the weeds here. We're people. Let's figure out how we can help each other. Let's start there. Now, on that topic, today's guest is an expert in conquering great things with power, passion, and purpose. Artesia Bolden can be found at tboldmedia.com. That's the letter T, boldmedia.com. There's all kinds of stuff there. Links to all of her books, virtual brunch, inspirational stuff, you name it. It is your one-stop shop for everything, Artesia. And now, listen to this, and then go visit that. This is my conversation with Artesia Bolden.
And we're going. It's that easy.
So, first and foremost, hi, how you doing today?
I am doing wonderful, Chris. How are you?
I am actually doing really well. I got to sleep in a little bit. That's unusual for me.
Okay.
But it was pretty good. Usually I'm up, 6 o'clock in the morning, ready to go for a run, do what I got to do, get myself together. There's something really magical about 6 o'clock in the morning, I find. It's just a beautiful time of day. Everything's quiet. It's a lot easier to kind of pace yourself into things and create the intention you have for your day at a time of day that's that kind of early. And today, I said, I think the snooze button's calling me. And once in a while, it's important to remember to do that too.
Yes.
So, yes. Tell me about you. Where are you from?
I am originally from Augusta, Georgia, home of James Brown, home of the famous Masters Golf Tournament. And I live here, I guess when you calculate it, it's just about half my life. I lived in D.C. for a good chunk. That's where I graduated, high school and college. And I spent a little time out west, so I made it back down south a few years ago.
Yeah, there seems to be a real resurgence in that area.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And, man, Atlanta is totally booming. Like, I don't know if I would say that Atlanta is the up-and-coming Washington, D.C., or if it's the up-and-coming L.A. It's, like, so much going on there. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. From what I understand from the people that I know that are there, it's just been the past 10 years, there's been this massive shift. But there are still pockets all over the place. That's the thing I find about cities that start doing really well. It's always a patchwork. It's pretty easy to look at a place by the overall outcome. But there are still all of these areas where there's still people struggling. And when you put those areas next to the places that are exploding,
There appears to be an even bigger contrast.
Yes.
It's just fascinating because, but I also think that the growth, not even just economic, but culturally, you know, the influx of art and ideas and different cultures and things like that, that is an overall good. And if it helps to draw attention to the areas that still need help, then that's even better.
Yes, absolutely. I love it when, like you said, the growth in the economy and the arts, it's most beneficial, I find, when we can have those gains to spill over into education, to spill over into even city planning as far as, you know, building roads and, again, schools and things like that. So we just, as a community, feel need to stay active and tapped in to doing it. You know, they're still having town hall meetings, city hall meetings, things like that. We have to participate and get out of the idea, this selfless thing. Okay, I'm getting into my shtick a little bit, but this is my whole soapbox. Getting out of the idea of these selfish pursuits, becoming more selfless and willing to do things for our fellow man and for the overall betterment of our communities.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's a tendency in some cases where selfishness is almost a defense mechanism that a person develops as to protect themselves from the environment that they find themselves in. Just about all personality traits, you could say, evolved from some kind of a situation in your life when you were young, or things that you learned from the environment.
And yes, I know for a fact myself, definitely pre-preteen, I was between 10 and 12 years old. I saw things that my mom did, things that she struggled with financially, and even her interactions with, you know, some folks in the community, some folks in my family. And I made decisions then of what I would not do and what I would not be. So, yes, absolutely kind of a, you know, survival coping mechanism and defense mechanism, and just those decisions that we make of what we won't do and what we absolutely have to do or have. It's very interesting, that psychology.
Yeah. What was probably the first time that you had a conversation with any of the people in your life about the idea of taking care of your mental health?
Wow, the very first time, I think, let me say, as a child or a teen, especially, I'm a woman of color, and in our community to this day, that whole topic is still very taboo. Right. Yeah. Even though we have family members that we know are taking medication, some have had to spend time in a facility, and that's pretty much any family, right? We just don't talk about these things very much. So I think I was probably a young adult, maybe freshly graduated from college or about to. So somewhere's between 21, 22 years old. And talking to my sister about a family member who never properly grieved the loss of another family member, and this particular woman in my family, she was going through cycles of depression. And, you know, she would still kind of go to work every day and try to pull it together. But you could see a clear cycle when it would come to that family member's birthday or even the anniversary of their death would just kind of be unhinged during that season. And, you know, my sister and I were able to have a really good conversation about being a support system for each other, being a sounding board for each other, and not repeating such a cycle.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
And especially when it's something that you haven't ever had to discuss mm-hmm. as a family, but also mm-hmm. culturally. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a thing that gets said a lot. You know, whenever I have guests on who are from the Black community, they tell me the same thing. They tell me it's not really something I grew up with.
Right.
It's something that in fact was kind of taboo. Mm-hmm. We didn't discuss this. And I have to wonder if any of that was due to kind of an already on the back foot kind of living. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense, that whole kind of defensiveness that, mm-hmm. that might have to come from survival.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a life that for the longest time I looked at it as things were tough. I struggled and. I found my way out, and I considered myself very lucky. Mm-hmm. But I also recognized that my life was not made any harder by just existing as a white man.
Uh-huh.
And so that was kind of a thing that I also had to sort of come to, mm-hmm. because that was a conversation that I wasn't ever really raised with.
Uh-huh.
I lived in a as I became kind of an adult when I moved out on my own. Mm-hmm. I barely graduated high school, and I went out. I got whatever job I could find. I married young. I had children young, mm-hmm. and I lived in a predominantly Black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But it was a neighborhood I was familiar with because. Mm-hmm. Strangely, I lived there when I was a kid and just ended up moving back. And it was in a little town in Michigan called Saginaw.
Okay.
It was pretty poor. We had like 20% unemployment. It was pretty rough. Mm-hmm. And so the neighborhood was rough, and you see things in a rough neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, and you live with it. You sort of get to know which block is good, which block is bad, and you kind of live block by block instead of, you know, city by city. It's like every other block has its own ecosystem, and you get to understand the ways that property taxes aren't paying for the schools, the way that the schools are failing the community. Mm-hmm. And you get to kind of understand those things. And yet, as I'm a person with bipolar and manic depression, I had a leg up in that it was something that I could have a conversation about.
Yeah.
I had a leg up in the fact that while my parents weren't wealthy, there were times where there was peace of mind in the fact that I wasn't ever going to starve. It was a different situation for me than a lot of my neighbors, mm-hmm. and that wasn't something that I understood kind of implicitly, but it was something that was. Sort of slowly brought to my attention. It's one of those things where you begin to recognize the differences even amongst class, where it's not necessarily the same thing. I didn't even mean to take us down this rabbit hole of discussing it. But at the same time, I think it is kind of we are sort of having a moment culturally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of hard to not talk about these things. And I think that the thing I'm discovering, especially among the people that I know, is that people are having a different sort of mental health crisis in that – a lot of the people that I know are having a difficulty in confronting sort of socialized racism that's kind of built in.
And
it is a thing where I understand where people don't want to talk about it, because we all sort of grew up in the same system. We just grew up in different ends of the spectrum, different places of the spectrum, with different sorts of feelings. And so there are worse things that you can be in your life than wrong.
Yeah.
And so to find out you did something hurtful or wrong, or to have this idea that you're carrying around. And I think a lot of people are carrying these things around and either refusing to confront them, or just having a difficulty in accepting the fact that we are not always just what we do or what we've done. We're pretty complicated people, and it's an interesting moment, for to say the least.
Yeah, that's definitely putting it mildly. And Chris, what I think it is, no one wants to look at themselves as the bad actor, right? Or the predator or the victimizer, right? But just as you said, we've all been in this system. You know, we were born into it. We didn't create it.
Right.
But we're just on polar opposite ends of that system. And the fact is that there are groups of us that greatly benefit from status quo and from how things are, from how our fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers did things to survive. And then there are those of us who have always come with the short end of the stick, and we've borne the brunt of systematic oppression. And we just have to call it what it is. The whole system built on we don't have to go too political, but even the idea of, trickle-down economics, there's a vast pool of people at the end of that spectrum that never got their trickle. It's 2020, and it just never happened. So what we have to do is we have to be willing to come to the table, to look at the real data, to have the right people in the room and have a real conversation of what it means, what has happened, and what it means to move forward in a systematic way where we can impact change for everyone. And then that brings us into a conversation of equity versus equality, right? So if you send everybody out a check for $1,000, well, you know, why is this guy who already has $1 million, $1.5 million in the bank, why are you sending him that $1,000 check, right? Versus this mom who's trying to feed 5 kids and now she's trying to homeschool them or make arrangements so that they can be. She's literally having to decide how she's going to go back to work versus what kind of schooling her children are going to get coming up this fall semester, because she still has bills. Right.
Yeah.
And so you're only sending her $1,000. See, at some point, we just have to be honest and say that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
No, of course not. And to think that all of this, decades of this, a lifetime of this, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It's not ancient history. And to think that doesn't create some kind of PTSD in a lot of people is just crazy.
Exactly right. And it absolutely is a traumatic thing. And, you know, we're talking about mental health here. So we are in the perfect storm right now where you have uncertainty as far as jobs and the economy. You have civil unrest due to decades of discrimination. And then you have folks who have to essentially stay in one place, you know, have a quarantine or a stay-at-home order, except for some folks who are, you know, having to still go into the workplace. I mean, talking about piling on, people are not at all, or even the most centered, educated folks are just not prepared for this whole situation that we're currently in. No one could have imagine that we will be here having to do these things right now.
Yeah. It's an unprecedented time. Mm-hmm. It's something that probably none of us alive have ever seen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you think about the last major pandemic, that was, I mean, that was over 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so here we are, and it's exposing a lot of our weakness,
mm-hmm.
and along with weakness can come growth, and that's not always graceful, mm-hmm. and it's not always comfortable. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we look at just about every moment in history that has brought about change, it's been painful. And weirdly, the amount of pain that we're all feeling right now kind of gives me hope for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it feels like we have hit a point where it's a situation where enough things have happened to cause enough of us to say, no more of this.
Yeah.
And we're not going to accept anything less than no more of this.
Yeah.
That's kind of hopeful for me.
Yes, and I love that there is literally a ray of sunshine that is kind of breaking through all of this darkness. And I'm thankful. Social media is absolutely a curse and a blessing. Like,
yes. Oh, yes.
It can drive you bonkers, but I love it because I've seen the tide kind of turn and people are sharing more uplifting messages. I am seeing communities, diverse, coming together, you know, having the conversations, folks saying, hey, I really don't understand this. I really don't, you know, I can't or haven't processed what has taken place decades before me. So let's have a conversation. How can I help? What can I do? Because it can't just be one group of people that look one way, having one voice. It's going to take many of us, and it's going to take a large voice, a collection of voices, right?
Yeah.
To really push this thing forward. Because the thing about it is, too, even with elected officials, and I'm talking about local, state, and federal, they still answer to us. So no longer can we just sit at home and say, well, I'll put them in office, you know, let them deal with it, whatever. No, we have to let our voices be heard on all levels. We have to let them know that what worked 40 years ago is not working now. And we have to be willing to take the time and put in the dollars to put in new programming and to, you know, to make things more equitable and more efficient. Like, we've wasted a lot of time and millions upon millions of dollars doing things the same old way. And just I worked on Capitol Hill, right? So I've seen them, you know, you take the same language, you put a different title on the bill, and you pass it through. And it's crazy, and it's been happening forever.
Yeah. Well, and you've got organizations like ALEC just writing legislation for people to just, you know, fill in the blanks.
Yes, kind of rubber stamp it. And then this is the thing, we Chris. We did not say this is what we were going to talk about, right? But listen, the dirty little secret that I think people are either ignoring or pretending or just absolutely don't know is that there are a bunch of 20-year-olds who are essentially making these decisions, right? Because guess what? Your congressperson that has been in office for 10 and 15 years, you can best believe that guy or that girl is not reading these 500-700 pages of legislation. There's a 20-year-old. There's a college student that's reading that stuff and summarizing it. So it's filtered through so many belief systems, through so many family histories, right? And these are the people that are making decisions on our behalf every day. These are the people at the press conferences. These are the people with the power. And things just have to change. Have I said change like 15 times today already? Things have to change.
Change is a good word.
Yeah, man.
It's a great thing. But in all of this, just like anything else, there are people out there who are doing the best they can with the information that they have.
Right.
And your thoughts and your beliefs all come from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And when you start shoring up your convictions and deciding the things that you're going to hold dear, the things that you're going to stand up and say, I'll accept nothing less than this. Mm-hmm. A lot of that does come down to where you see yourself in the world mm-hmm. as a person. Mm-hmm. And we're not having the right conversations with people about making sure that you're checking in on yourself just to make sure that you're thinking about yourself in a healthy way.
That's right. That is absolutely right. Because, you know, one person has the power to do many, many things because you're going to touch, you know, the people in your household. You're going to touch your neighbors and your community. And that wave can ripple out. So we do, especially in times like right now, we do have to practice self-care, right? Not just closing up and not shutting down, but simple things, even like what you said. Okay, today I'm going to allow myself to sleep in a little bit. Today I am not going to make myself slave to this agenda. But you know what? I'm going to take a couple of hours. The kids and I, we're going to go get ice cream. I'm going to take a walk around the neighborhood. Simple things like that do so much to help decompress our brains. It literally helps reprogram us. So when we come back to our projects and tasks, we have a fresh set of eyes and we're more clear and centered than before. There's plenty of studies that I can't quote right now, but the information is out there that says that it absolutely works. By you just driving 8 and 10 hours a day straight, that's not healthy. And it's actually not productive because you're not going to even do your best work with that type of schedule and that type of mentality.
And it is pretty easy to allow yourself to fall into patterns that basically keep your body moving, but keep your brain and your soul locked down. Mm-hmm. Because it's so important to just keep moving. It's so important that especially if you're a person who has people counting on you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got people counting on you, then you'll maybe ignore some things about your own mental health. Because you're putting yourself aside, thinking that this stoicism, this idea of it doesn't matter how I feel about it, it doesn't matter what I think, that has a trickle-down effect mm-hmm. into the people in your life and also into everything that you tell yourself about your story. The reality that you create for yourself about what the world is, what your place is in it, the language that you use mm-hmm. to talk to yourself about yourself can help to manifest as who you think you are.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love it that a man can stand and say that, because you hear lots of it, especially with us as wives and mothers, building each other up, and we talk about affirming yourself, but that is the most powerful thing in the world, is speaking to yourself kindly, right? Building and knowing that you have the power to rewrite that story. You're in charge of all of the chapters. So you have to tell yourself that you can do that thing, that you can conquer, that you can launch out and do something new. I work a lot with aspiring entrepreneurs or side hustlepreneurs, and they get really fearful about, putting more time and more money into their business, and they, want to keep a traditional job because of the security and because of the people, like you said, that are counting on them. But I always coach them that you have to be careful how you talk to yourself about yourself and how you talk to yourself about your business, because there is actually an element of self-fulfilling prophecy there. You will have what you say. When you say these things out loud, the universe actually conspires with you to make those things happen. So if you're speaking negatively, you're going to see those negative things manifest. If you speak positively, you're going to see those positive things manifest.
Well, talk to me a little bit about that. Talk to me about your process of obtaining that mindset, because it sounds like that wasn't a mindset that you came equipped with from the beginning.
Right. And the thing about it is, I have never suffered from low self-esteem. Never, 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 never. My mom, all of my uncles and aunties from small, they've always told me that I was smart and beautiful. So I was just crazy enough to believe all my life, hey, that I'm smart and beautiful. I've never been told anything different. You know, maybe some crazy kid trying to bully at school or whatever. But I'm like, whatever. I get enough affirmation at home to know, and I didn't know it was affirmation at the time, but I knew the story that my family was telling me, and I chose to believe that. I got it from everywhere, right? So then, you move into your teenhood and your early adulthood, and you begin to question things a little more. It's just like, okay, wait, I've kind of been, on this, and I believe this to be true, but the media tells a little bit of a different story. And for me personally, I didn't see a lot of representation in the media. I didn't see a whole lot of folks that looked like me and had my background. So then you kind of question some things. But I was also fortunate to go right into another very nurturing environment. I went to a historically black university. So I, again, was getting the affirmation. But let me fast forward to just a couple of years ago, because, Chris, what happened with me, I had kind of checked a bunch of stuff out of the box. I got married. I had a good job, of course. Like I said, I had graduated college and all of those things. But I wasn't happy. I was still chasing dollars and, trying to get other things, trying to have this certain car and this certain home and be able to eat at these certain restaurants. So I had this kind of junk floating around in my head, until I became very, very ill. On my last traditional job, which oddly enough was at a nuclear power construction site here in Georgia, and I literally only even took that job because it was one of the highest paying jobs in the area. And the hours were crazy. Of course, the money was great, but the hours were crazy, and it just, socially, mentally, it wasn't a great place. And I thought that I was strong enough to be able to not allow that to become me. It's just like, okay, you put on the hard hat, you go there, you do the thing, you walk away. But I noticed that I was carrying more and more of that home, and I began to just become very sluggish. working 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., the worst shift in the absolute world, right? Mandatory overtime.
Yeah.
Okay, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Literally 60 hours a week. And then, you know, they thought they were doing us a favor and they brought it down to 50. Anyway. But on that job, and of course you don't have time. All you want to do when you're not at work is sleep, right? So I wasn't eating right. I wasn't taking supplements, none of that. I was literally falling asleep behind the wheel, like trying to commute to work and everything. Anyway, so when I began to have kind of breathing problems and very low energy, I was thinking that, okay, it's diet and sleep. Like, you know, your body's not doing right because you're not sleeping right. You're not eating right. And I still began to push myself, but it just got worse and worse. So I finally broke down, went to the doctor, and she was just like, you have to go to the hospital right now. And I was just like, what? I was like, I drove here by myself. What are you talking about? You know, I'm trying to make logic of it. And she's like, no, Miss Boulding, you're not just having it. I was thinking it was asthma because the doctor at the same facility that saw me a few weeks prior was saying that, okay, we're going to put you on an asthma pump and then we want to keep an eye on your blood pressure because those two things are kind of irregular and we don't know which one is causing the other. That's what he told me. It's like, okay, whatever. You're the MD. I'll listen. And not to belabor the story, but I would be hospitalized 4 times total. So she made me go to the hospital. That was right going into Thanksgiving of 2017. So January, March, and May of 2018, I was back in the hospital because the treatment that they were trying to give was not working. And I was still working. I was still going to work. But the very last time I was in the hospital, it was the week of Mother's Day, May of 2018. I literally thought I was going to die. I told my husband and mom as much. Like, I really told them, hey, you better tell family if they want to see me, just come, because I really thought it was it. I went into congestive heart failure and respiratory failure at the same time. Yeah, 38 years old, by the way. Okay, no medical history, by the way. And what I found out just in really dissecting, talking to my doctors, looking at things both physically, mentally, and spiritually, I believe in my heart that because I was so off track, because I was not operating in what my particular gifts are, because I believe that we are born with it. I believe everyone is born with a gift and a calling. I believe that I had so neglected that I was so bogged down in selfish pursuit. I believe that my soul became sick and that manifested into my body becoming physically sick. So in thinking about that right there in the hospital, because, you know, when you're about to die, you reevaluate things in your life. And I thought I said, if someone was to actually write an obituary about me today, what would they even say? She got a good education and had a good job. Like, what the heck is that? Like, I was so unimpressed with myself. I was just like, what kind of legacy is this? And because I had been fortunate enough to be exposed to just great minds and great thinkers out in Los Angeles, you know, working with the mayors in LA and DC, and just knowing better and knowing that I had a community to serve, not even just my family, which I had neglected also. So literally right there in the hospital, I sent for like writing materials. My aunt sent me, you know, journals, notebooks, pens, and I began to write what I would do differently. And I made a commitment to myself, and I'm a woman of faith, so I also made a commitment to God that if I were to walk out of the hospital, I would just do life differently. So I began to talk not only to myself differently, but to everyone around me. I didn't just, shirk people off or high and by. Like, I began to invest in others as well as myself mentally and emotionally. And what I know took a major player in the healing of my actual body, and my medical files prove it, was I began to speak positively about my physical body and my health every day. I would do it out loud every day in the mirror, and I saw changes, Chris. I'm telling you, immediately, my very next doctor visit from May until June, and then July, I had to do follow-ups with my pulmonologist, and there were drastic, drastic differences that even shocked him and the care team. And so no one can tell me that speaking to yourself and to your environment, no one can tell me that it doesn't work. It absolutely works.
It's been proven time and time again that these things are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's all tied together. And every bit of yourself, you know, the people talk about mental health as if it's simply thoughts. But your brain is an organ.
Yes.
And there have been studies that have shown that cognitive behavioral therapy can literally change the shape of your brain.
Yes.
Literally.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of let's even call it mental calisthenics.
I like that.
That if that's proven to cause a physical change in your brain, why would that not cause a physical change anywhere else on you?
Mm-hmm.
There's, I mean, of course there are other factors and there are limits.
Yeah.
But there are definitely cases that can be proven where the way that you exist changes you. It changes your physicality. It changes your personality. It changes your face.
Yeah.
And if you can't just simply look in the mirror and recognize how differently you feel and look after making some positive changes as far as how you're going to speak to yourself. And, you know, there was a thing that I said earlier about there are worse things you can be than wrong. One of the other things I like to say is there are worse things you can be than afraid. Because being afraid is just... it's just your body trying to tell you to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. It's something that we have as human beings. It's a function to help us.
Yeah.
And just because we're not facing lions and tigers anymore on a daily basis doesn't mean that we're not wired to respond when something that the body is saying, hey, pay attention to this. It's not necessarily out of danger, but it could simply be unfamiliar. And that's where fear comes from.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Fear of the unknown. And if you want to make it really simple and childlike, my husband likes to prank me, and so I'll be in the kitchen and he'll sneak up behind me, and I go crazy every time. Like, as many times as he has done this, he still just completely startles me. And the physical response, the increased heart rate, and I'm legitimately like, oh my gosh, you know, surprised. Like you said, it's just your reaction.
Yeah.
But it can be deprogrammed and reprogrammed. So, you know, pushing past that fear and tapping in to your personal power. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Life-changing.
Because you may not be able to control your husband sneaking up on you. But you do have a measure of control how you're going to react to it when it happens.
The
increased heart rate, the surprise, those things are reactions. You know, mm-hmm. It's like when the doctor hits you in the knee with the little hammer. Mm-hmm. Your leg goes up. It's a reaction. But it's the split seconds afterward. It's the conversation that you tell yourself about how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. It's everything surrounding that. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily the reaction mm-hmm. that's the issue. It's the reaction to the reaction.
Because
a lot of times people find that being surprised mm-hmm. or being, let's even just say surprised. Mm-hmm. Being surprised by something is automatically unpleasant. They don't mm-hmm. like the vulnerability of being surprised. They mm-hmm. don't like that they don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And all of that manifests itself into other things. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that surprise comes in and it manifests now as anger.
Anger, yes. Yes, exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And how is that anger serving you?
Right.
How is it serving the people around you? What is that anger doing to give you control back? Is it giving you control back?
Nope.
It isn't.
It's not. It's not, because he's going to come. He may give it a week. He may give it 2 weeks, but he's going to come, and he's going to do it again. And I laugh now. I can't honestly say, you know, maybe if something else was going on in the day and I just wasn't in a great headspace, then maybe I would get a little upset. But for the most part, I've just kind of laughed. And he's so silly. He gets a real kick out of being able to surprise and startle me. So, you know, we laugh about it now. And it's almost expected. It's still unexpected when it happens, but it's expected that it's going to happen. And we can definitely apply that to life. We, you know, like I said, we probably could have never seen like stay-at-home orders and quarantine orders happening.
Yeah.
But we know that our economy has major ebbs and flows, right? Like, we've mm-hmm. lived through several recessions already. We lived through the tanking of the housing market. And guess what? We're still here.
Yeah.
Bless God. We still, I don't know who all may be listening to this, but for the most part, you know, we all have roofs over our heads and we still have, you know, food in the fridge. So there's still so very much to be thankful for. And I just believe that we should spend more time and devote more energy in being grateful, practicing gratitude, and then
yeah.
taking it a step further and saying, hey, how can I help somebody else? What can I do for, you know, my neighbor or my friend? And just kind of spreading love and light. That's my other soapbox. Spread love and light.
Well, I mean, there are worse soapboxes to be on. That goes into another area where you're sort of manifesting the. I mean, it's very simplistic to spout platitudes like "be the change you want to see in the world," and yet there is something sort of beautiful in that simplicity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is a thing I've seen. Myself, I've seen it in other people, and I've seen it in myself. I was a very angry, frustrated young man, and I didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know I had anger because I was quiet, because I was busy, because I was out there trying to find the money. You know, sometimes working two or three jobs at a time, just to keep things at broke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so it was, I didn't have time to be angry or depressed or resentful or to recognize the areas in my life where I was the problem.
Yeah.
Where I was in my own way. I thought, you know, it's funny because if you would have told that young man, "You're in your own way,"
yeah,
how would I have reacted? I would have gotten angry.
You would have been angry. Yeah.
I would have said, "I'm working three jobs right now to take care of these people."
Yeah. Yep.
What do you mean I'm in my own way? I'm doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not.
Right.
You're a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
You're,
yes,
you're getting up. You're going through the motions, but they're not the right motions.
Yes.
And you're not taking care of yourself, man.
Yes.
And how is that manifesting as a father? Mm. How are you as a father? Are you there? Mm. Or are you in your head? And I was. I was in my head. I think about the first few years of my children's life. And if I have any regrets, it's that I wasn't really there. I was there. I was physically there. But man, Dad was always too tired to play. Dad never had any, like, I don't even have a lot of memories of what it was like to hang out with my children. And so I have regrets about that, but they're pretty well grown now. And we have a great relationship, but that took work. Because it just as easily could have been the kind of relationship I have with my parents, which is good, but distant. Just because we don't really know each other. Which is strange when they're people that you've been around your whole life.
Your whole life, yep. And what I think with the older generation, they were stern, and you take this and you be grateful and you sit down, shut up, you stay in a child's place, you don't question anything that I have to do because I put this dang roof over your head, so you better just sit it down and shut it up. Right.
Yeah.
So they were on that end, right? And then my generation, I just turned 40 last year. We, unfortunately, and I don't have any birth children. I have 15 nieces and nephews, and that's plenty.
Yes, it is.
So my generation, you know, folks might have children. They went to the other end of the spectrum, and they want to be friends with their kids, and they want to dress alike and tag me in the social media and all that, which I think is absolutely insane. But I think if we have, you know, a meeting in the middle where we leave that door open for young people to have honest conversations with us, to be able to tell us what's going on with them and us not beat them up, but help guide them and coach them into making the right decisions and not taking all of their power from them. That's what I think is going to work, especially with this new generation, because they are the try anything generation. Like, they will literally try anything once.
Yeah.
And if they live through it, you know, they'll tell the story. But, like, they don't have a whole lot of boundaries. Not until they try it. You know, they'll put boundaries in place after they try.
Yeah.
So we have to be able to kind of coach and guide them. But this isn't, these kids, we can't just kind of bring the hammer down on them and tell them to sit down and shut up. That we're dealing with a whole different type of kid now.
You know, you say something really profound there. You can't force people to be grateful. People have to choose to be grateful.
That's right.
And that's a tough lesson for some people.
Especially when you grow up with a lot. And, you know, that's where this kind of entitlement and privilege comes in. And myself, I talk to my best friend about her daughter, who's my goddaughter. She has to believe that there's a money tree somewhere, whether it's in the backyard or whether it's in a flower pot under the bed. Like, she will ask for anything, and she just expects that she's supposed to get everything. And we have to say, okay, you know, this has to be earned. You know, you earn it by being respectful, being trustful, being where you say you're going to be when you say it, like answering the phone when I call, doing your household chores. So there, you know, things that you put in place to, you know, help guide the younger people. And then as adults, I hate to say it, Chris, but with this pandemic that we're living through, we are really getting a front row seat to things that we should be grateful for. We've taken so many things for granted. And I was talking about this the other day. So many times, you know, in our culture and in a capitalistic society, we might look down on someone who's working in fast food or working at the gas station, and in, you know, even in the good part of our heart, we may wish better for them. We wish they were better educated. We wish they had better positions. But guess what? These are the very people that is keeping us going right now. I mean, the whole thing would have fallen apart had it not been for these people. So my hands are off to them. You know, we talk about the frontline workers being in the hospital and healthcare or whatever, but I give all props and major shout outs to the folks working in the grocery stores and the fast food places,
man,
and the gas stations. Come on, man. We would have been, I mean, hurt without these folks, okay?
Yeah. I mean, these people are everything right now.
Right,
absolutely everything.
Yeah.
And there's more we can do. There's definitely more we can do to honor these people. And man, we have gone over so many things in such, we've already blown through an hour. I feel so energized and so awake, and you know what? So very grateful for this awesome conversation. And I want to thank you so much for having it with me.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me and just, you know, letting me rattle off what's in my heart. Thank you so much.
And there you have it. If you want to get some more Artesia in your life, and I know that you do, why wouldn't you after hearing that conversation? Please follow her on Instagram at Artesia Boulding. You can also find her on Facebook, Artesia.Boulding. And don't forget the website, tboldmedia.com. That's letter T, boldmedia.com, where you can get all of the information on her brand new book, Induction to Power. Break up the darkness in your life, burst with light, and walk in purpose. And that's all I got for you this week, everybody. There is a sale going on at the TeePublic store, which is teepublic.com/user/randomify, where you can get yourself a Coffee Over Suicide face mask to keep yourself safe. But until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.